This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to Lock and Key Unlocked, a podcast about Lock and Key on Netflix, as well as the comic books by Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin. I couldn't be happier.
I'm Pete. I love the comic books.
And we are going to be talking about Lock and Key Season 3, Episode 6, Freebird, as well as getting into whatever happened at the top of the episode here. But if you haven't watched it on Netflix, go watch it, because lots of spoilers here. Big thing here is that Bodhi is a ghostie, and they're trying to save him after Captain Frederick Gideon opened a big demon portal right in the middle of their house. There's one thing that's holding him up. There's one key that he doesn't have, so he can't completely open the portal. So he wants that. They want Bodhi's body back, and they'll do anything to get it. By the end, as we suspected, we do get Bodhi's body back in exactly the way we thought we would.
Bodhi, body back. Yeah. Great stuff.
No, Bodhi didn't want his body. He had a separate plan.
So I was having problems with this last episode, so I wrote it down. Can I run it by you guys?
Please.
Sure.
If you've got a bad Bodhi, get the Bodhi body back. If Bodhi leaves his body, then his Bodhi body goes slack. Bodhi needs a body, but Bolton's body bad. So Bodhi's now a birdie because birdies aren't baddies, and Bodhi's birdie body gets the Bodhi body back. I still messed up right there.
It's pretty good, though. You put some time into it, and I appreciated that. Now, Pete, now you do your song.
The whitest thing that's ever been done.
I was trying to do a rap. It's a poem. Have you ever heard about poetry, Pete?
Okay, all
it's
right.
A poem.
Yeah, Shel Silverstein. He's a famous poet.
That's my guy. Sister for sale. Sister for sale.
It's not hip hop. It's sleep hop. Is what we're calling it.
Nice.
Nap hop.
Well, anyway, by the end of the episode, Gideon is on the trail of the last key. Bodhi is back, but it's a huge problem for everybody. And the big reveal is Sam is also back. Pete, what is your issue here? You seem pretty upset about this episode.
Yeah, there wasn't a guitar solo. There wasn't a drum solo. There was no mention of Freebird whatsoever. At least give me a shot of the car. Make me feel a little Freebird. But come on,
Pete, there was a shot of the car. I was like, you get a little Pete's peek at the car in the background when they're first walking up to as prisoners. You get a quick shot of Tyler's car in the backdrop. I thought for sure you would be hype on that.
I thought when I saw that, I mean, because I was also very focused on the car and I definitely saw this and I was aware this was happening. I was like, oh man, the car is going to save them. The car is going to do that thing where like, whoa, smashes through the house. Goes to the edge of the portal. It's kind of hangling for a second. Does a sweet backflip. Lands right on Gideon. End of show.
End of show.
Wow.
Lock and car key.
I love it.
But you got to be happy because we got a very loose adaptation of arguably one of the best, if not the best, issue of Lock and Key, Sparrow, which kind of works out like this in that issue. If you haven't read it, though, we've talked about it a lot on the podcast. It is a Calvin and Hobbes inspired issue where Bodhi is a birdie and flying around with this group of birds. and it's great.
I like you're referencing your own track. You're sampling your own track.
Every time I mention it, I get residuals. So.
Self-royalty? Oh, man. I get so many self-royalties.
Yes. We have a little residuals jar in my house, and anytime one of my kids sings my songs, they got to put a quarter in. So far, haven't made a lot of money, but fingers crossed.
Wow. That's good. Your song's going to hit it home.
Your own children. That's
a lot of the biggest hits started at home, and then they totally branched out from there.
Yes. So I thought this was great. I mean, this is
the running time. Did it meet your?
Do you want to talk
of like? Was
tell you what, exactly? These Lock and Key episodes keep getting shorter, and I keep getting older. All right.
I mean, if we want to talk about it, like I think these are the perfect amount of running times we got going here. Like I'm very happy with these episodes. I think they're doing just as much as we want, giving us nice reveals at the end. When
I was hoping with the Freebird episode, you know, maybe we would stretch things out, get a little solo, you know, like really milk some great stuff. But they kept it tight.
You'd be happy to know that this episode was actually the length of Freebird. It was the perfect sync up of your two favorite. You could press the song Freebird, press play right when the animal key in use, and it syncs up. It syncs up.
That's super cool and great info there, Justin. Thank you for offering that up.
You got to do the research. So every time I watch an episode of TV, I try to sync it up with a different track. And smart. It is never works. Very time consuming.
So I think we did actually spend too much time talking about The Running Link last episode.
But, agreed.
But I did enjoy it. I think they're doing a great job here just in terms of filling up the time they have and making it all worth it. Loved almost like the downtime afterwards here, where everybody's hanging out, trying to figure out what their next move is, licking their wounds, along with the sweet guitar licks, of course, of Freebird. Yeah. But I thought this was really good. It's not, you know, it's still, you get a ton of action in the second half of the episode, but it felt like a really natural way of delaying that ultimate sort of finale vibe of, oh, there's a demon portal that's going to suck absolutely everything into it. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I thought that was great. Like, they continue to have really smart moves, not just for all the characters, but the plot as well.
Did you kind of feel bad for Gideon when he was trying to make the portal, like, grow and get bigger, and then he couldn't, and then he was just, like, you know, like, really sad?
Yeah, no. He has portal dysfunction syndrome, unfortunately.
That may happen if you're over 300 years old. Okay.
But if you can hold your portal open for 4 hours, you need to seek a doctor's. What I was going to say is, I think this episode is doing a great job of just, like, subtly weaving together the entire series. Like, the reintroduction of Sam Lesser, the fact that we get to see Chamberlain here, reference to Sam Lesser sending the sparrows to help Kinsey find the angel key. Like, everything sort of coming together, but subtly. It's not like that third act, like, ha-ha, it was all one thing. It's more like just pulling the thread a little bit to find the
And you had to be pumped when you found out who had the final key in their head.
Gordy Shaw?
Yeah,
the final key?
Yeah.
Well, the name of the next episode is Curtain. So, I think we're going to get a little episode about the original.
Oh,
yes. Yeah. It's finally time we learned the curtain key, where we find out how you can just change the curtains seasonally to reflect the weather outside.
That's nice. I was going to say, maybe it's a key that makes the curtains match the drapes. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Gordy Shaw?
Yeah. Also, I think I said that wrong. It's not curtains match the drapes, because that's the same thing.
That's hilarious. I love the great. That's definitely leave that right in.
I think it's very excited. The pillowcase.
So good. So I think the idea that Gordy Shaw holds the final key in his brain, and it's a little early in the episode for speculation, but what's his final key, guys? It's a key we don't know about.
I don't know. I'm hoping it's the season 4 key, because I'd love to unlock that.
Oh, come on. Right,
the renewal key.
Yeah,
all the actors just turn to the camera and are like, tip their hats, like, see the season 4 key.
Please.
I really don't know. I was actually, let me see if I still have it open. I was looking through a list of the keys to try to figure this out from the comic books.
I did the same thing.
Yeah, and there's nothing that's immediately feels like, not only is this the thing that Gideon wants, but this is the thing that has to be hidden in Gordy's head and will ostensibly be the key that'll kind of, like, solve everything. You know, because I assume that's what it is, right? Whatever it is
the cure-all key?
Well, I don't think that's how it is, but I do think they're going to figure out, aha, we got this out of Gordy's head. This is the key that Gideon wants, but this is also the thing we can use to bring about his downfall, right? Are you guys feeling the same thing?
Yes, because I think it does have the idea of hiding in Gordy, who wasn't an essential member of their squad. He wasn't a keeper of the keys. He was like a side character at best, who we've seen reintroduced here, who's like, all those Locke kids seemed cool back in the day. So he was definitely not someone they were like, we trust this person and need to hold them. It feels like this is a sort of a last-minute fail-safe, almost like an break glass in case of emergency.
So
it makes me think this key is a key that deactivates all the keys or something, where it is like an apocalyptic key that somehow ends the magic or changes it in some very large way. The only key from the comics I thought could be referenced here is a major component we haven't seen yet at all is the key that unlocks the moon. And I don't know how that would factor into the story. It feels wildly unrelated to the story, mm-hmm. but that's the sort of the most major key from the comics that hasn't been introduced in the TV show.
I like your theory, Justin, to throw out an alternate one that I think would provide more spectacle than plot. We haven't seen the giant key,
That's what I was thinking. And there was that shot when Bodhi was running up the stairs. They panned up and showed a window that actually looked like a slot for a giant key. And I think it would be interesting if we did see the giant key, because if we're going to kind of like heighten things from the comic after, you know, we do the Calvin and Hobbes, I feel like a, you know, giant fight would be,
But the only thing about that is, like, the reason for the giant key was because of the Crown of Shadows, right?
Right, mm-hmm. right.
By the way, for any listeners who haven't read the books, we're talking about the books right now. There's an issue where Tyler uses the giant key, comes out of Keyhouse as this enormous giant, and fights some giant shadows from the Crown of Shadows. So, sorry, take it away, Justin.
Sort of like almost a kaiju battle in the comic book series, and it was like it's a great issue where it's all just like full page spreads. In the series, the Crown of Shadows isn't a factor here. So it's like, if we have the giant key, what's the other giant?
No. The giant is going to push the portal closed, you know, and then maybe he opens up a chowder drawer and kind of pours a little on top and eats it away, so that way nobody...
Like, he takes a taste of the portal and is like,
gross.
Oh, I got to put some chowder on this.
Yeah.
I was going to say, maybe chowder is like what chowder is to me, like spinach to Popeye, where you squirt a can of it in your mouth and you get super strong.
maybe that's the purpose of Josh. Like, we got a little bit of the purpose of Josh this episode, but maybe Josh is going to be giant hot Josh.
No.
And he'll be like,
take it easy.
Guac over here.
We gotta wait for this bit. We gotta wait for the bit to finish.
Because he's a giant.
If Hot Josh becomes a giant, he will eventually replace the sun. You can't have something that big and that hot without
being
the sun.
Medium Josh is just fine the way he is, and we don't need any more of him. He got shot. He did his part. That's enough of medium Josh.
Picante Josh is what we're calling him.
Well over 10 to 15 minutes into this podcast, and I don't think we've actually talked about the plot yet. So why don't we get into that?
So it starts with them running, and, you know, it's nice to see Rufus... and Rufus's mom pick them up and kind of already start to get on the same page with the plan. So I felt like that was a great start to the episode of where things kind of left off.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can actually, even though everything dovetails together, sort of talk about this by character groupings. And I think a good place to start is with Rufus and Ellie, because we've been talking a lot about what their purpose in the show is right now, what they are crucial to, because not that they've been shoved to the side, but just sort of questions about where is their plot arc going. And we got a lot of that here, not only with Rufus helping everybody out, but Ellie and Nina having that badass scene where they basically try to take down Gideon all by themselves with these tools from her shed. All of that stuff was great. Like, I love the emotional stuff, and I love the action stuff as well. So I was very happy to see that.
The moment they were like, don't worry, your mom's a badass. It's going to be all right. Like, that was cool.
I love the way they sort of like really set Ellie up well in this episode, really welcomed her back into the story. She relives her time in the demon world right at the beginning of the episode. And then they show up with a bunch of tools. Gideon recognizes her from her time in the demon world, which I thought was cool, while Nina smashes him in the face with a sledgehammer, which is dope. I also love the scene where I guess this was with Kinsey and Tyler, but just on demon world, Gideon talking about like, oh, you want the keys? The keys are my kin. I want them back. I want all of them back so that I can bring them back. And I really love that it's a villain like Gideon is just a blunt force villain. Like, we're not meant to identify with him very much. But I love including that here because it does make sense. These demon, even though he's evil, these keys are his lock family. They're his Bodhi is one of those keys potentially. And so he's like, I want my friends to live in my little satchel and then I'm going to bring them back into this world and all that, which I thought was cool.
I agree. That was a very cool motivation. And like you're saying, it really walks this line where it doesn't make him sympathetic in any way, but it makes him understandable in terms of what he's doing. Jumping back to the Rufus of it all, I also thought there were some great scenes with him throughout the episode. One thing I wanted to call out, I'm always, as you guys know very well, very obsessed with like background props of food in things. So they were sitting at this table and eating bits and pieces cereal. And I looked it up. It's a prop cereal that's been used in Grounded for Life, Heroes, Being Human, Desperate Housewives, The Killing, and a bunch of other things. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I always think that's very fun when it's like some clearly made up product that's just created the cinematic universe of bits and pieces, is I guess what we're getting here.
Nice. Yeah. Nice catch there.
That's good research, kid.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much, you guys. Well, I guess that's it for the podcast. That was the main point I wanted to get at. No. Alex. Let's go over to Bodhi, because this is a big one that we've been talking about. One thing that I wanted to mention here that really did hold me up in the episode, and it has absolutely nothing to do with what they do and everything to do with what you guys do. When we got to Chamberlain, I could not stop thinking about how you guys have talked about him on the podcast, where you're like, what does he do? Just sit there all day, just waiting for somebody to come up to him?
And he does. He's just chilling.
Like, oh, hello.
Like a lot of older folks, you just want to watch the world go by. Put your lawn chair in your front yard and just watch the parade pass.
I mean, he does have a front row seat to just kind of watch things go down. But it was great to see him. Also, what was interesting was Bodhi kind of reacting to Sam. We had to have that kind of emotional arc quick, right? Where Bodhi's first like, hey, I hate you, you're a bad guy, and then get won over by Sam. I was kind of like, at first I was like, Bodhi, this isn't the time to be angry, but you know, of course he's a kid and it's understandable why he's upset. So I was happy with the kind of the Sam transformation, so much so that at the end of the episode, when the rest of the family is like, oh shit, Sam, I'm like, guys, it's going to be all right. No, it's a different kind of Sam. It's going to be okay.
It's wild to think about from their perspective, like thinking about them as if they're real people watching this happen over the course of 2 days where maybe they've slept, maybe not entirely clear. They've had to team up with Dodge, the demon that tried to kill them over the course of months. And then
who orchestrated the death of their father, if not executed.
Exactly. And now they're meeting the guy who killed their father. And he's like, I'm here to help as well.
But I will say, I agree with you. And that's why, like, Bodhi, I was like, oh, of course he thinks that. But I was like, we're on the side of Sam. We know he's changed before Bodhi does.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the thing. As viewers, we obviously have a very different perspective than the Locke family does. So, like we're talking around, I really appreciated that reaction from Bodhi. Also appreciated the Jedi training with the sparrows. I thought that was very
fun. That was hilarious. You got to be one with the birds and feel the energy. And it was funny to watch Zen Bodhi kind of become one with the birds to kind of control them there.
Yeah, very quick training montage, but also very effective. Gideon, weak to birds. Really, birds really messed him up.
Yeah,
he had them up against the wall.
Well, and that's what I was worried about, because we saw him and he was just like grabbing birds with his hand and like squashing them. But when there's a bunch flying around, he can't do that. So
but that's the thing that like not a lot of people know about the Revolutionary War, actually, is that in British land, they don't have any birds. So when they came over here to America and they're fighting, that was the thing that took them down.
Paul Revere was a bird. Not a lot of people know that. He was just a sparrow in a hat.
What was funny was like how much time they were taking around. Like he was just like playing with birds and they were just on the floor like, oh, you got this key? Okay, I'll grab this key. I was like, hurry up. It's just birds. It's not going to completely distract him, but I guess it did.
I mean, this is taking a little step back from that scene. But another thing that I really appreciated about this episode is how deftly they weave together everybody's individual plans. Like both from the villain and the hero perspective. But the moment where they come in and they're like, Bodhi, we're going to give you Bolton's body, okay? Just bear with us.
Yeah, he was like, no way, man.
No, I'm going to do my own thing.
Not interesting.
I don't like that leather jacket. I don't want to rock that.
Yeah. But
I don't want to be Spike from Buffy.
Bodhi and Sam have their own plan. Kinsey and Tyler have their own plan. Nita and Ellie are kind of part of that, but sort of working on their own thing. And then, like, Rufus is on the side doing his own thing as well. And, of course, Gideon is sending Bolton to do stuff with Josh. So there's, like, a lot of chess moves and moving pieces, but it never feels like you're watching that pieces moving around the board thing so much as the characters actually interacting and weaving and following each other. So again, it was really deftly done.
Because it felt like the characters were actually just behaving on their own, and it was sort of like, don't do that. And then it was like, okay, it worked out. Nice. Like when Rufus showed up, I was like, oh no. And I was like, oh, it's good. Okay.
Well, that's the thing. Like when it was very interesting, they had this plan that, you know, I mean, Tyler drew a map, like he really kind of put in some work. And then Kinsey's like, oh, I see snow and a bird. And Bodhi's plan is way better than what we got. We're going to roll with that, which I, as a leader, knowing like when to be like, yo, fuck what I was doing, let's do this new thing. I mean, that's a smart move. It was impressive the way she kind of adjusted on the fly.
You're the leader of the podcast? Is that what you're putting out there? You said as a leader.
That's weird that that's the one thing you pulled away from all the things that I said, okay.
It was the last thing you said. That was the main thing I listened to.
Oh, okay. You're one of those. Just repeat the last thing said? Okay, cool.
The last thing said?
I'm the leader, though, right? Wow, nice. Look at this. We got an improviser on our hands. Do we want to talk about Sam Lester, though, in general? Like, he gets the big reveal at the end here.
He does. I loved that move. I didn't see that coming, that he was going to go into Bolton's body, but that was so smart. Like, they set it up. You should have known, but it was just a great magic trick with having Bolton's body laying there and then not coming, but like having him come in and still do his Bolton stuff. But I didn't realize that it was Sam.
I was like, oh, it's got to be Sam. I was like, please let it be Sam, because that would be so amazing. And I was so happy.
Because only thinking back, I was like, why do they have that moment where we saw Bolton reanimate?
Yeah.
And I was like, who cares? He's a henchman. And then I was like, of course we saw it because it's Sam.
But that's the thing, like, we almost felt for Bolton a little bit in this episode, because it was like this thing where Gideon was like, okay, what do we have to do? We'll do this ghost thing. Bolton, you do it. And we're like, oh, man, this Bolton guy really gets the short end of the stick a lot.
I do have...
You feel bad for Bolton?
This episode, you felt bad for Gideon, you felt bad for Bolton, you don't like the Sparrow stuff. Who... Have you been taken over by a demon, Pete?
Pizza demon. We got to unlock him.
Well, I do have another question about the rules, and it's fine. And again, as usual, I don't really care that much. I'm not too upset about it. But so Bolton's an echo, but he also has a ghost in him, so he can go through the ghost door and release a ghost, and then his echo body drops down?
I guess so. I agree with you. I was thinking that how come he gets to do that, but... An echo seems to have almost all the same powers or same form, corporeal form, as a regular person, except they're impenetrable to bullets.
Old-timey bullets, yeah.
So all of that stuff was good. There was one other... Oh, we got to talk about Hot Josh, because stuff went down.
Kid.
We don't need to do that.
Well, this was Hot Justin. You've been asking for... almost two full seasons now. What is the purpose of Josh? What is going on? When will he come back to me? I love him. I love him. What'd you feel? I think this was his purpose, was here.
For him to go, wait, my ancestor Gideon? That was his purpose?
Well, I think that's just the beginning of it. Like, we'll get more from that, I think.
Not sure about that.
First off, what's that?
Not sure about that, but all right.
You don't think we're going to get more? You think it was just a reference, the fact that he's like, that was my ancestor?
No, I think it was so that they could go there, they could threaten him, and he could be brought into the fold by Nina, explaining everything to him, and that ultimately he is going to be the new hot daddy for the Locke family, and that's how
I think he is going to be the hot daddy, no doubt about that. But I do think we're going to get some other use out of the fact that he is the descendant of Gideon. Otherwise, it was just a conversation topic, an icebreaker for
them. That's right.
No, it needs to be more than that.
Little place to connect is all, and it's all we need in life. You know what I mean? Mm.
I guess we'll see. I guess maybe they could do something with the time shift key or something like that. Not sure exactly how that would work, but whatever it was. Oh, what were you going to say, Justin?
I was going to say it could be just a conversation. Like, Josh can talk to Gideon about it. I think, in a way that will make him a part of the final confrontation here.
Yeah, he'll be like, I'm your great-great-great-grandson. And Gideon will be like, well, I can't harm you now.
Well, how about you guys? I'm surprised you didn't want to talk about the fact that Josh was kind of like pulling away from Nina in this episode.
We do want to talk about that. Just buckle up for a second. We got to start at the beginning because Gideon has to send
the beginning. I'll come up with a rhyme for next episode about Be Gideon.
Cool. That's your assignment.
It's a poem. It's not a rhyme.
Yeah. Gideon needs to send his henchmen, send Spike, send Bolton out to deactivate Hot Josh because he's too hot for them to ignore.
Deactivate.
So he sends, we get the whole Jamie.
I just want to say, I'll let you get to that in a second, but the line where he said, deactivate the hotness. I love that.
I love that too.
That was the worst voice. I did not like that.
Blew
voice.
Out Pete's ears. Why, Pete?
Stop doing that.
I love how Josh is just always chilling at the museum. Just like hanging out.
Read something.
Nobody visiting that museum in Matheson. Yeah. But I thought that was great. I thought all the stuff with Jamie was great and really well staged. It was super tense. Yeah. Yeah. As well throughout.
Smart well the way they were like, hey, you don't need Jamie anymore. I thought that was a smart move on their part.
Wait, what?
What?
When Bolton was having them all at gunpoint, and then he was like, you don't even need Jamie anymore. You know what I mean? So that was cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was happy for Bolton to be like, yeah, you're right. I don't need this kid. So I was
he's just a young soldier trying to make do. Just trying to get back to his Revolutionary War family, I guess.
No, he's just trying to he's just trying to live his new leather jacket life that he has, that he's just found and is like really into.
Right. He's trying to get to the seat of the vampire lords so he can really work his way up that particular chain.
But exactly.
We'll see if that ever happens now.
Then we get a nice scene with Josh and Nina after he's taken a musket ball right to the pec.
Yeah, she keeps hogging him, and it's like, hey, why do you keep hurting Josh?
It bounced off his pecs. His pecs are like steel.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. The hospital was like, we don't know. Nothing seems to harm him. It's crazy. He's too hot for muskets. Too hot for muskets. You know what was crazy, though? We never saw the ambulance drivers that picked him up, which I think would have been a great
missed opportunity. Yeah, that would have been great.
Mm-hmm.
Famously played by classically trained actors Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez.
Now, this brings me to another topic that's a little off the plot, but I just want to mention at this point, we're on episode 6. We have 2 episodes left, right, in this series. They've already had the Joe Hill, Gabriel Rodriguez cameo. So that's like 2 of the big cameos that happen in the Lock and Key comics. They had that back in season 1.
I like where this is going.
But there's 3 other cameos that they haven't had yet, which is the 3 of us. Do you think those are going to happen in the last 2 episodes?
The huge opportunity at the hospital to feature a Dr. Zalman. So I think your door has closed, sir.
Do you think they're waiting for a guy who gets boulder falling on him, Justin?
Well, I will say not a lot of action happening in the caves, which is where my character barely escapes dying from boulder crushing.
No, he's dead.
No, my guy lived. I went to the prom and lived a great life afterward.
Nope. No, you got crushed by Boulder.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, we were, as early fans of Lock and Key, Gabriel Rodriguez and Joe Hill had us drawn into the series over the course of it. Alex played Dr. Zalban. Pete played a cool teen who gets cut in half by a weird sword. And I played
double-sided black
teen.
Axe, bro. Double-sided black axe.
That's how you want to go in real life, right? That's in your will?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if you die from some other natural causes, you want me to split you in half with an axe. Right?
That's right. That's right.
That'll be weird. I'll try to talk to the coroner. But
yeah. Let's make a pact, guys. If however we go out, Pete, you'll go out by getting split in half by a black axe. Justin, you'll die by a boulder.
Double-sided. I'm worried you guys aren't going to get this right. It's got to be a double-sided black axe.
And when I die, I want to die by being a successful doctor.
That's right.
By having a small part and then not a featured again later on.
Well, so I'm still holding out. We'll see what happens, I guess, in these last 2 episodes. That all said, any other moments we want to call out here?
So to continue the Hot Josh, I guess I want to call it a thesis. He and Nina catch up. Nina talks to him, further connects with him. She believes him. And I really like the connection between his sort of belief in this fantastical door that can bring the dead back to life and her being like, that door is real. It's just a bad door. So, like, they do actually sort of believe the same things and connect in a nice way.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. And I also thought, initially, I was like, oh, no, he's going to forget this because that's how the magic works. But that's not what she was doing. She was just telling him about a thing. So he's not necessarily going to forget, right?
It's seeing the magic or remembering having seen the magic that messes with your head. So I think just hearing about it. Well, I agree with you. When I was hearing the scene, I was like, what are the rules here? But I think it's fine to talk about something that you saw and believe in without having actually witnessed it.
Yeah. Two lines that I wanted to call out that I liked in particular. So when Kinsey is apologizing to Tyler at breakfast over a nice bowl of bits and pieces, she says she's worried that Bodhi will be really mad at her. And Tyler sarcastically says he'll definitely spend ghost eternity hating you, the way he delivered that line. Very funny.
Well, let me just say also, like, once they picked up the Ellie and Rufus picked up the Locke family and they stayed the night and had they were having a pretty chill breakfast for the situation at hand. Nina was like fielding calls from Josh while also like having a chill, like, I guess I'll have the parfait. I was like, come on, this is serious. There's a portal in your living room.
There was. Go ahead, Pete.
The line I wanted to talk about is when Rufus was telling Jamie what's up with the ghost stuff and how Bodhi is a ghost. And she has that line where she goes, oh, shit, that's messed up. Just really fun and well delivered there. That was really great.
Yeah, that was the other exchange that I wrote down, which was super, super fun. And a great line for Rufus, too, when they're like, it's a little hard to explain it. He says, Dodge stole his body and now he's trapped in Key House as a ghost. Yeah. And they're like, oh, yeah.
Rufus gets it down. Well, let me say, on Rufus, it feels like we're not going to get some of the Rufus hero moments we maybe saw.
How dare you? What I wanted to talk about next was Rufus on a bike going to save the day because you can't stop Rufus. You can only hope to contain him. And he is going to ride his bike and save the day.
And I think he did a good moment to save his mom, which was cool. But I think we had made predictions earlier on in this season that we were going to see Rufus save the whole day, not just mom day. And I think we've maybe moved past that at this point.
Oh, go F yourself.
I think so, too, just because we also got the, I keep wanting to say Squadron Supreme, and that's not what it is.
Strange.
Squadron Strange. Thank you. So him laying that out in terms of here's how you do it. You do a ruse. You do a feint. I think you're right, Justin. I think, like, we haven't seen the last of Rufus. He's still part of the show.
Huge part.
But I think in terms of saving the day, he's done that at this point.
No. Nope.
Potentially. All right.
Real quick, I want to shout out when Bodhi came out that door, teared up. Got me.
Yeah.
That was great. Great reunion moment. Really nice. The fact that it happened, I think we had thought it was going to be a big end of episode type moment when Bodhi came back. The fact that it came at that moment sort of took my breath away in a weird way where I like really was really pleasantly surprised by it happening.
I totally, totally agree. Let's wrap up here, though, and talk about our key moment in the episode. Pete, what is your key moment?
Well, I'm still fired up about you guys not believing in Rufus, so I'm saying Rufus on a bike is the key moment. But realistically,
Rufus on a bike is a key moment. So, what are the implications for Rufus on this bicycle going forward?
He's going to just save the day on his bike. You just wait and see. But realistically, I think it is the Tempest and old Gordy Shaw last trick up the old brain sleeve. So we'll see, see how that all unfolds.
That reminds me, I need to get a trick up my brain sleeve because I'm sort of out. I agree. I think the key being in Gordy Shaw, it's an episode I've been looking forward to for literally years.
You undercut it. You were like, Gordy Shaw thing. I think you're right. We're going to see some of the best acting in this Tempest that is, it might break your television.
And we've referenced it a lot, but let's just to lay it out, back in the in Rendell's day when they were in high school, and I think that's why we've seen flashes of it, they gave a performance of The Tempest for their high school theater production, and they used all the keys over the course of the production to make it truly fantastical. And I think based on what happened this episode, we're going to get to use the head key to experience that firsthand, which is something I can't wait to see. Very cool. Really lights up my classroom. classically trained ass.
Real quick, they go in to his head. They get to a production. They're like, oh, man, this is what we've been waiting for. It's that theatrical production. They cut, and it's like, Our Town. How are you feeling?
I'll be upset. It'd be a weird choice, I will say. Should we use the public domain Tempest from William Shakespeare, or maybe go into trying to get licensing for Cats? Hmm. I guess we'll see.
Either
but
way.
The cat buttholes are their own little locks.
Yeah,
their own
locks. Yeah, you got to use the cat butthole key to unlock them.
Please. That's stop. The key to his brain. That's the Gordy Shaw brain key.
I'll throw out the key moment. I think Sam coming back at the end, that's really going to turn
that's
the
what
tide
I was
in a certain
say,
way. Yeah, I think that's going to be super important beyond the Gordy Shaw thing. Very excited to see how that plays out. I'm very excited in particular to see how Nita reacts the next episode, because I feel like it's going to be picking up that sledgehammer, hitting him directly in the face, and we'll see where that leaves us.
I do think just casting forward with Sam back in the mix, and we had talked earlier about Rendell potentially having one final turn where the family gets to meet him. Will we get a forgiveness moment from either a time-shifted Rendell, an Echo Rendell, where he could finally release Sam from his guilt?
I think so, right? Now that we know how the time shift key works, you got to have a moment where they do bring Rendell back from the past. He's there. He knows they only have the moments of the hourglass, and everybody's crying and sobbing, and he settles everything, and then he disappears, and they move on with their lives.
I can't wait for that. That's a beautiful way to have a like clock ticking, super sad, but super like satisfying last moment. With a father that's passed.
Oh, or maybe they go back and they all sit there and they watch The Tempest, and it's really well done.
Or Cats, I guess we'll see. If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Lock and Key, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, also at Lock and Key Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, keep it locked right here.
What's that whisper? The cat's butthole key is somewhere here in my house. I must find it.